Good morning.
How's it going?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Are you flooded there or?
Oh no, it's not too bad.
No.
I mean, it's been pretty bad. I should apologize now because you've automatically chosen words that are hard for me to say.
What?
I started some dental treatment yesterday,
Oh
and
no.
I've got some Invisalign plastic brace things to like
Right,
correct my
yep.
teeth, and it's quite a struggle to use the letter S. So it was
Are
fine
they
earlier, but now I'm under pressure. It's like, oh, I can't fit up there. So
the permanent ones,
bear
or
with me.
can you take them off at night or not?
I can only take them out to eat.
Okay, right.
So they're basically
There's like
like mouth guards.
they're like little clips on the teeth, are they? They're like little almost like little dots that you pin the brace to. Is that the same thing?
Well, they're basically like mouth guards, so
Oh,
they're
okay.
custom made. They're just 3D printed, so
Oh,
they look at
wow.
where your teeth are and where they need to be, and then they print like 30 sets that each week you change, and they slowly realign everything to the way it should
Oh,
be.
wow.
But they had to
Okay.
glue some like little chips to some of my teeth just to get a bit of extra purchase to move them around,
Right,
and it
okay.
is
I just.
incredibly sore. I will say
Yeah.
that much, and I have to wear them for like 23 hours a day, so I can take them out to eat and then brush my teeth and put them back in again. So
Jesus.
it's yeah, but it
So
saves
you
having
got to sleep
like
with them then.
20, yeah, which was
Oh.
fine actually. That's sleep was a blessed relief from the numbness of my mouth.
That sounds horrific. Now I know someone, one of the parents at football have had some like braces fitted, but they do it in a weird way. So it's almost like dots in the center of her teeth, which are like little clips. So the dots are like glued on, and then the brace is like this line, this sort of strip that clicks into it. And so she takes it out to eat, and then you just click it back in, and it's very,
Oh,
technology's come a
that's
long way
nice.
since when I was a kid, I had bloody headgear. So I had this because my mum didn't want my any me to have teeth taken out to bit to move my teeth back. So they had to basically move my back teeth and then move the front teeth. So the back teeth consisted of this brace that went in, which was, you could take out, and it had these two little sort of metal tubes on each side. And then you had this head thing that you put on. It's like a strap that you put on your head, and then this metal bar that went round, and these elastic bands. And the teacher, the teacher, the dentist was like, "Yeah, so he's going to have to wear that during the day." And she's like, "No, he's not going to school in that. There is no way he's going to, middle school and secondary school, or it wasn't even that. It was like first and middle school, I think it was, or first school. So yeah, I just get bullied to hell. So I never wore it at school. I just wore it in the
It's
evenings
nice
and at
that she knew
weekend."
that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's got enough trouble. He doesn't need that. He wears glasses. He already gets bullied. He doesn't need that as well. Yeah, but yeah, and then I had the front thing. So yeah, I mean, it's crazy nowadays with what they can do.
It's weird that it's just 3D printing. They are ridiculously thin, but yeah, it's unpleasant.
Well, speaking of that, I forgot to add that to the. I forgot that to add that to the notes. 3D printers, yeah. I finally opened my wife's birthday present. So I bought her a 3D print. Yeah, I bought. Well, we basically bought each other gifts because her birthday's January, mine's February, and neither of us had got around to opening them. So she bought me this hydroponic herb garden thing,
Oh,
which is
yeah.
quite cool. Yeah, so that's which has gone completely nuts. It's like a bloody jungle in the room next to me now. It started off with these like nine little pods you put in, and you fill the water up and you put the light on. It's got these LED lights, and you go for like a few days and there's nothing happening. And then you suddenly see this little sprout, and then it says to take the little plastic covers off these pods when the sprouts come up. A couple of them are definitely not happened. They're definitely dead. I've got some replacements. But the basil that I've got in there has just gone completely nuts. And it went from these cute little tiny miniature basil plant to this huge great thing now that's I've got to start, using it because it's ridiculous. So that took me a few months to open that, but I got her a 3D printer and
Nice.
she just never got around to setting it up. So I set it up for her and it's just insane. I mean, I always thought they were cool, but we've actually, we've printed some silly stuff, and the kids wanted a little boat thing, and there's like some demo models that you can download. And so just printed off those, printed a burger press, which was quite cool. But then made the mistake of putting in the dishwasher and it warped, so I got to print another one. But the best thing was she was sorting out our greenhouse and doing like gardening stuff and getting it all ready for harvesting and everything, or growing. And there was a nut missing from this one of the bars that held the glass in on the roof. And so we were thinking, okay, we could go through the garage, try and find a nut that fits. Then I just figured, hold on a minute. So downloaded a set of nuts and bolts as a file from Thingiverse and picked the right nut, which was like a 4mm nut or something. And I think it's called a 4E or something like that, or 4M. And it printed it in like a minute. And in a minute, we had this nut. Yeah, we had this nut printed in a... The first print was quite quick. It was about 30 seconds. But it was very... you know the way they layer it. It was very sort of rough. It wasn't good enough.
I would expect it to be.
You could sort of see. It looked a bit like a shredded wheat. You could see the sort of holes in it. So I put it on fine mode, thinking, oh Christ, this is going to take like 4 hours now. Yeah. And it took a minute and 9 seconds. Printed this nut off, and it was threaded. It was threaded and everything. Just screwed it straight onto it was perfect. It was like incredible.
That's crazy.
And it's just. The stuff when it comes out, it's like it sort of looks. It's like Lego, you know. It's pretty strong. Some of the models that we built a little thing. Leo had to do something for school where he had to, for some reason, had to have a penguin, which they're gonna then a penguin with a hole in his bottom, which is unusual.
That is an odd request.
Yeah, because I think they're doing.
Does it go on the end of a pencil or something?
They're doing some technology thing with some robot cars or something, and they need to put a little character on top. So basically, we needed to print this. We needed to make a penguin. So I downloaded this penguin model, printed it, which took about 4 hours. Then you can sand it down with some sandpaper. Then we lacquered it, put some base coat on and put some paint, you know, painted it. And it looks like a proper little toy. And he's taken it in and used it. It's insane.
Wow. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's good fun.
See, I've got a few friends with 3D printers, and they always seem to take ages to make anything. They could be like, oh, I'll just leave that on for 20 hours.
Yeah,
and I think I can't be asked. But if you can print a nut and bolt in a minute and 9 seconds, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and you can print fairly small things, you know, like an hour or something. I mean, the burger press took about 3 hours for the top and 4 hours for the bottom. But the only reason for that is that when it did the top, which looks a bit like it looks like a stamp, you know, the sort of stamp you will stamp when you stamp paper with, you know, paid or whatever. It's got that sort of grip on it, and it can't print it flat. Because what happens is you're supposed to put like that, you get like this Pritt stick stuff with it, but it's like this evaporating glue. And the idea is you put that on the base and then it helps keep things flat, and stop it rising up when it's printing. The problem is if you're printing something that's a huge circle that's flat on the base, you will never get it off. It will just stick and that's it. So it had to print it on its side. So the really cool thing is the software that I use for it, it prints these little supports. So it's like this little scaffolding that it prints, and then so it'll print the scaffolding, and then it will print this thing on its side. So it looks a bit like a jet engine on its side, sort of thing, you know. And it's got all these little supports holding it up, and then when it prints, you break it all off, and then you just, you know, snap off these supports and sand it down. It's pretty clever stuff.
Yeah, I had a friend who had he lives in Sweden, and they don't really have showers there; they just have baths all the time. And so he couldn't find a shower curtain. That's all he wanted. And like walking around the shops, they just don't sell them. And he finally got a shower curtain, but it didn't have the hooks with it. So then he 3D printed them. And exactly, it took him ages, and they were rubbish. And so then when I came over, I just bought him some that I'd got for like a quid on Amazon.
Well, there is that. I mean, the nut thing's a good example because it, you know, printing the nut was much quicker than looking for that particular nut in the garage, you know, but going, yeah, you know, I've printed this nut. Oh, how long did it take? Oh, 6 hours, you know. It's like, what? You could have spent 3 hours searching for the nut or just gone to the shop. It would have been easier. Yeah. So I think there is that tendency of printing for the sake of it. But there's some cool, like little storage things you can make. So someone's designed like a modular, you know, like a pencil holder type thing. It's a bit like that, but for, you know, for nuts and bolts or just little things that you want to store. And they've done it in a way where they can slot together. They're like a hexagonal shape, so they can slot together, and then you can build this, like, you know, wall of shelving that you can then store things in. So there's some cool stuff like that, but obviously, you know, it's going to take a while to print. But yeah, I like the quick solutions. Those are pretty cool.
You're right that people that have them tend to want to solve any problem with 3D
Exactly.
printer. So
Exactly.
I recently, I don't think I talked about this last time. I had a Oculus Rift VR headset,
All right.
and in my office, I'd use it occasionally with my gaming PC, but it was a bit of a pain because I had to get like these little stands out and put them on the desk, recalibrate everything, and I'd spend, half an hour setting it up to play with it for 20 minutes, and then be like, "Well, that was fun, but I won't do
Yeah.
that again for another 10 months." And then I got a new graphics card, and I had a new motherboard and stuff. And after a while, I was like, "Hang on, I've got most of the components for another PC." So I bought a new power supply, put it in my garage, above the like on the loft boarding that I put up there, and then I have the cable hanging down so that the headset is in the full size double garage, hanging from the ceiling. So I don't have the cable trailing behind me while I'm walking around. It's just up in the ceiling.
Right.
But then I've got to keep the cable up there because obviously if I move around, the cable will come down. And it won't go back up. And I found these things on Amazon where they're basically like retractable dog leads, like six of them. And you put them along the ceiling and thread the cable through it. Because then when you drop down to the floor, for example, or move around too far, when you walk back to the middle, it retracts back up because it's weighted
That's
just
cool.
right to pull the cables up and down. And I was showing it to a friend who's got a 3D printer. And I was saying, the only problem is that the cable's held on with like these little rubber bands. And so sometimes it pulls through a little bit too much. And it'd be good to stick it there. It's like, oh, I could 3D print something for that. I could do this, I could do that, I could do that. And I'm like, yeah, or I could just, use a pin. And it's like, oh, yeah, you could do that. It's something you see a lot in developers, I think, where once they've learnt a new technology, I mean, every single problem should be solved with it. Where actually, a lot of the time, there are easier ways of doing things. It's like, yeah,
Yes.
you could do it
Yeah.
that nice, flashy way, or we could just do this.
It's a bit like if you're playing Lego with your kid, and then you need I can imagine this happening. You need a custom brick. They're trying to build something, or you're trying to build something with them, and it's like, yeah, I need a custom brick. Right, I'm gonna go and print it. I'll be back in a minute. 6 hours later, the kid's now bored and doing something else or gone to bed. Waking the kid up. I printed it. Look, I finished it. Look, wake up. You will look at this. It's taken 6 hours. And it's just like a weird reversed brick or something,
Reminds me of that the Mitchell and Webb show, the sketch show they did years ago, and they did one sketch where they were BMX Bandit and Angel Summoner, and BMX like they'd come to a hideout with a gang, and the BMX Bandit would be like, "I could go in there, do a really cool wheelie, knock the gun out of his hand, hit him, and then save the day." And the Angel Summoner goes, "Oh, I could just send the angels in." I suppose so. He just summons these angels to do it for him every time. Anyway, we should probably get onto the real meat of the thing because
Yes.
13 minutes in, and I don't think our audience gives a shit about your 3D printer or my teeth. So,
True. So, what's to talk about? WWDC, maybe? I don't
first things
know.
first, I was fucking furious that during one of the presentations at WWDC, they referred to it as Dub Dub.
Oh, really?
I recoiled. I was like, oh,
Oh my
in the
God.
keynote, no less. Oh,
Who said that? I don't
I
recall that.
can't remember. They were demoing something,
Oh
like a
God.
code thing, and yeah, they called it Dub Dub, and I was just like, oh no, it was the photos. It was the photos guy, and he's like, oh, and of course, like the photos view, if I look at the year one, it shows all the pictures from this date over the last few years, so you can see all my previous Dub Dubs. And I was like, oh, you bastard.
At least if they said MacBook Adorable or Jobby Job, I think I'd have switched off. That'd be the last straw. But yeah, let's what should we talk about? Mac Pro?
Yeah, go for it.
Are you getting one?
Hell no. The size of the bloody thing. I mean, just like it's a ridiculous size. If you use the AR thing, I don't know if you've done that.
I've done it. Yeah.
Like I put a photo of it on Twitter on my desk. It wouldn't fit on my desk, and you can see my old Mac Pro, like the 2013 trash can model next to it. It's tiny. It's absolutely tiny.
It is gigantic.
Which is funny because I had a friend who was like, "How the hell did you get one already?" I'm like,
Yeah,
Well, the AI is good, but it's not that good.
Exactly. I did it. I discovered the AR thing. I saw someone else doing it, so I tried it and put it under the desk, and then said, "Cool, my review unit has arrived." And in the AR of arrived was capitals as a little clue, because I thought I'd get some smart ass, you know. So I just did that, and then I was actually getting people replying, going, "Oh, cool! Really look forward to your review." And I thought, "Oh shit, I better come clean." So I looked at
you should write a review.
But did you see the people doing the, you know, because you can shrink it down, so they were like putting it in their hand and stuff, and
yeah,
you could, should do a Mac Pro Mini, yeah, a little smaller version.
Well, but
yeah,
I mean, it's meant, a smaller one.
It's a ridiculous machine, but I think, you know, when you were watching the keynote, you could obviously see the new monitors, so there was clearly something going to go on there. I thought it was going to be way more. I thought the base price would be like 10 grand of the actual.
Yeah,
Mac Pro, and I think it's about 5 or 6 the base price. It's sort of quite. It's sort of in line with almost the iMac Pro. But the monitor, I thought, okay, this is going to be like a 2 grand monitor easily. And it was six grand. But I mean, you watch that, and I think, well, I don't need one. I can't justify one, and can't afford one in terms of the whole thing. It just doesn't make any sense, and it's way too big. But it is. You know, they basically, it's like they came out, basically put two fingers up and said, right, you wanted Pro, here's Pro, you know, open your wallets, basically. Because it's not, all the feedback afterwards has been, you know, taking the piss out of the stand and all these different things. And it's like, this is not for you. This is not for you to do CSS and HTML or write some Swift code. This thing can do, the base model with one of those afterburners can do
at least 5 instances of Slack.
Probably. Yeah, Firefox, yeah. It can do three 8K streams of ProRes or whatever the format is, the raw format that this thing can process, that everyone else has to pre-process, that it can do, you know, live. Three streams of 8K video, and it's like, and you're thinking, oh, you know, they've lost touch with the real people that need this. It's like, you don't need this. You're writing your, you know, Android, Swift, whatever it is, apps, you don't need this device. This is a production quality. And I was looking up what they would, you know, when they talk about the reference monitors and stuff, and looked up one of those Sony ones. This is like 24, I mean, they're talking about $40,000, but the one I found was 24,000 quid for a Sony reference monitor. So for people in that industry, you know, even forgetting the Mac Pro, just the monitor, for people in that industry who are spending, you know, upwards of 25K on one monitor because they can't justify one for everyone, it's an absolute bloody bargain.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that, and I'm guessing the fact that it doesn't come with a stand is because a lot of these reference monitors are installed on these rigs. You know, whenever you see those behind the scenes thing on iTunes extras or whatever of how movies are made, you know, they'll have those, what did they call it on The Hobbit? They called it the barbecue. I think it was called, on The Hobbit, they had this thing called the barbecue. It was really cool. And it was this huge rig that had been built to take all of the, it wasn't even 4, I think it was 4K or 8K footage from the RED cameras. So all these hard drives, basically, all these SSD drives that were in the cameras, they were like taking out, and then they put it in this thing, and it would make multiple copies of it. So they had all this stuff archived, multiple copies, synced everywhere. Mm. And, you know, when you look at these devices, they're like, you know, industrial desks with those Visa mounts, and, you know, everything is almost like custom built. They custom build these rigs for each time, you know. So that's the market. It's those people that are going to have the Mac Pro under the desk, and or even rack mounted version, whatever, and then these monitors on Visa mounts or whatever on these big, you know, rigs that they have on site in the studio, whatever, that they're doing and they're watching stuff on. That's the market, you know.
When you've got a device that has 1.5 terabytes of RAM,
yes,
that's, I mean, again, you can make the joke that that's for Google Chrome, but I mean, yeah. it's not for a developer, that is for someone doing serious video work. I think that the base Mac Pro, or even configured a little bit, absolutely fine if you're a developer with a big project.
Yeah.
I've got friends that work for game development studios, and their Mac projects take 25 minutes to render because they have so much going on. Compile, not render. So having a new Mac Pro would cut that down probably to like 15 minutes maybe, which would be good for them. But for like me, I don't need a Mac Pro. I mean, I might get one, because my issue is that I already have external monitors. I have my ultra wide, I have my 4K portrait monitor. I don't need a new monitor. But I do need a machine that doesn't have a screen bolted to it. And the iMac Pro, much as I like it, I don't need the screen. It takes up too much space. So
yeah, that's,
I could go for a base Mac Pro, or I could theoretically pimp out a Mac Mini to its extreme, because that is pretty good too.
Yeah, the monitor's definitely a no-no, but but I could see if I ever got to the point where I'm thinking about getting an iMac to develop on, and thinking about an iMac Pro because that seems to be the best one to develop on and do work on, then yeah, because of the difference with pricing, or because of the closeness with pricing, I could be tempted to say, actually, no, I'll just use my existing stuff, my existing monitors, buy that base or you know, a low-level Mac Pro, and at least then I can swap the graphics card out later, or I can stick in more memory, or I can add more storage. Whereas with the iMac Pro, I'd be...
You're stuck.
Yeah, the chances of me wanting to maybe would never happen. So maybe I'm trying to solve a problem that would never actually be a problem. But I just think for the price, you know, it's not like you're going from $5,000 to $10,000. If you're saying $5,000 for the base iMac Pro and maybe $6,000 for a Mac Pro that's, you know, a reasonable spec for what you want as an upgrade, then yeah, that would be, I can see that definitely. But the display, Jesus, I mean,
the display is definitely for a very, very specific niche audience, which is going to be photographers and video people. No one else needs it because of the color difference, the balance, all the rest of it. But the it's a funny one because, like, the audience, you could hear them go, ooh, when he said $999 for the stand.
I know, yeah.
And I thought to myself, there must be a reason. And I've had lots of people asking me, oh, $999 stand, ha, ha, ha. Because I have a lot of people in my life who are dicks and like to take this up whenever they can. As soon as it came on, I was like, oh, my father-in-law's going to love this. And so I looked into it and I was like, well, the base amount is £200.
Yep.
And I thought, well, that's probably all right because it's held on with a fucking magnet. So I'd expect it to be fairly expensive because it just clips onto the back and then you can base amount it, which is pretty cool. But I was like, why is the stand $1,000? Like, I'm looking at it and thinking, there's nothing that special about it. It goes up and down, it moves left and right. I don't understand why this costs so much. And it turns out the reason for it is because if you have the stand and your monitor breaks, it gets replaced for free because it's insured. Whereas if you put it on your own stand or base mount, it is not.
Gotcha.
So basically, if the stand fails, then you get a $5,000 monitor for free. So that's the reason why.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, it's just, it's seeing all the follow-up, the typical crap that you get where it's like, oh, for $999, you can either buy a stand or an iPhone 10. It's like, and can you attach your monitor to an iPhone 10? You know, what a ridiculous comparison. You know?
Marco will try a few Coke cans and an iPhone 10.
Yeah, you know, oh my God, this stand costs as much as a Mac Pro did, you know, 15 years ago or whatever, or what, you know, the cheese grater or whatever it was. It's like, I don't understand why you're doing that comparison. It literally makes no sense.
You're right. Yeah. Apple have just gone, you know what? You want Pro? Here it is.
Yeah. I love that. I just thought it was like,
put your hands in your pockets.
Yeah. You all think you're Pro. You know, you think you're Pro because you use a MacBook Pro and it's got the word Pro in it and you think you're a Pro user. And it's like, well, we're going to tell you what Pro means. This is Pro. And they know because, you know, they've got that whole Pro team who have helped drive all this stuff. So,
you've got to think, I mean, how do Apple make their, like, nice videos? Because you've got things like, all the keynote had videos and stuff in it, but I mean, just like their advertising videos where they've got, like, all of these molten drops going everywhere and devices spinning in. They need, you know, high quality stuff like that to make those. I'm sure their media team are using Mac Pros now, or will be.
Exactly.
And they'll save them a lot of time, so...
Exactly. And, you know, the fact that they've solved this problem of this, you know, direct from RAW. So you're literally taking the RAW streams, taking it in and working with it, you know, three RAW. And you can put multiple of those Afterburner cards in.
Yeah,
which is
pretty
which
crazy.
Is the most. It's just, I mean, I really want to see when it goes into the store just to do that classic thing of speccing it out to see what the most expensive version is.
Because
I'm
60
thinking,
grand I'm going for is my guess.
Yeah, I'm thinking easily 50k plus. It's going to be
because
what was the trash can maxed out was 20, was it, or 18 or something?
18, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Good lord, that's going to be hysterical.
The funny thing as well is that at least Craig Federighi is like completely unabashed about it, because on the live talk show thing,
that was brilliant.
John Gruber said to him, "How much are the wheels going to cost?"
Yeah,
and he's like, and "Well, how much would you pay for good wheels?"
Yeah, and then I like the fact that Jaws then said, "How many do you need?"
Yeah.
It's like you could have two, and then just sort of prop the other bit, prop the back up with Lego or something, and then and I love that when Federico was like, you know, there's an installment plan available
exactly,
for the wheel.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, there's an installment plan available, and you think they don't care. They know that the people in that audience are not going to buy it.
Exactly. It's not for you. Well, you know. I mean, there was some company that does web development or something going, oh, you know, I've done the AR thing and it fits great on our desk, but, you know, thanks, Apple, we're not going to be able to afford this. It's like you build web pages with HTML and CSS. You know,
that's like saying, thanks, Aston Martin, I use the AR model and your new Vanquish model fits on my drive, but I'm not going to be able to afford it, you money-grabbing bastards.
Exactly.
Thanks, Elon, that I can't put the new Tesla on my driveway.
Yeah.
Bastards.
They've lost touch with reality,
very cool. That's hardware.
Yep. Software, macOS?
Yeah.
Catalina? Yeah, or macOS Catalyst? No, Catalina.
Catalina.
I don't know why they did that. Well, they've got like Catalyst and Catalina. Very, you know, just a weird.
Maybe it's
weird
like
things.
A nice little, so you don't forget which one it came
with. Yeah.
You know, in 8 years' time when we're like, when did Catalyst come out? Like, oh, it came out with Catalina. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Be nice and easy to remember. So,
yeah, Catalyst, the product they launched and deprecated in the same presentation. it has a purpose. It's a leg up initially, isn't it? But
I have to say it's pretty good. I've tried it out just with one of my apps, and I literally checked the box, hit run, and it worked. And it's like, oh, that's unexpected. That's pretty good. So I'm already a Mac developer now. Changed my website over.
One of the criticisms last year was people complaining about what was called Marzipan, you know, the home app and some of the bundled apps, which I know Craig Federighi and the Jaws guy said, basically it was different people's decisions on which apps got converted or whatever. But one of the criticisms was how, you know, if you go in the home app and go to configure dates or something, it gives you the roller interface.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah, so do you still get that stuff or have they improved that?
That has changed.
That has changed.
I don't know if that specific one has. I'll load up Catalina now and check. But I know things like you used to get like the iOS action sheets from the bottom of the screen. That's changed. So now that's little black, almost like a popover tooltip that pops out as like a context menu, which is way nicer. And that happens automatically. So in my app, I had like a button that you press to get like a sheet that pops up to say, how do you want to sort this stuff? And on an iPhone, you tap that and it pops up from the bottom of the screen. On an iPad, it's in a popover, because that's how Action Sheets work on iOS. And then on macOS, it's just a popover, but it's a different style one. It's a more Mac-looking popover. So it's
when you built your app as a macOS app, does it feel more like a macOS app than if you ran it in the simulator?
It feels like I'm running it in the simulator, but it's got a slightly nicer Chrome around it.
Okay.
I would say. I mean, it's like the home app.
I think it's an awesome thing they've done. The fact that for most people you can check a box, do a build, and your app is now running on a Mac is insane. And I, you know, as predicted, things like Twitter, you know, there was that statement from Twitter that they're now going to come back to the Mac because they can just convert their existing iPad app.
Yeah.
Which is going to, you know, I'm using some dodgy Chrome thing at the moment to get like, you know, I've done like a wrapper in Chrome, so I've got an app installed that says Twitter, but it's basically the mobile interface, web version running in a window, which is not bad, but goes wrong as certain links that you might click on, you'll suddenly find you're in a different web page within the app, which is a bit weird.
So
it'll be nice.
The time roller is still there.
Okay.
So it's still the iOS style roller if I go into the automation section. But things like if I go to change the temperature, it's got a nice new, like almost like activity ring style control.
Oh, nice.
So it looks slightly better.
How have you installed this?
I mean, the home app is shit anyway, so.
Yeah.
it's terrible on iPhone and iPad, so it's going to be terrible on Mac. It's a bad example.
Yeah, it's an awful app. Just the whole room switching interface and the number of times I've gone into the iOS app and thought, how the hell do I add a room, you know? Just awful. How have you installed it? Have you done a separate partition or a virtual machine or different machine or what?
A different machine, so it's just on my laptop.
Oh, okay.
And then my Mac Pro is staying Mojave until it's released, because I have too much stuff that would break. Like, just things like HomeKit, HomeBridge. I've got quite a few apps, like the one we're using now to record this podcast. Call Recorder will not work on Catalina at the moment.
Oh, really?
So I will not be updating my main machine for a while.
No, I usually wait. I do update it for the betas, but usually 3 or 4 in for Mac OS. And then, and the main reason I avoid the betas is obviously submitting to the App Store. You can't do it. But the workaround I've had for that before is I run the current Mac OS in a Parallels just with my certificate synced. And then I just do the build from there.
I only ever update my laptop because I just use that for playing around anyway with new tech. I don't do any work on my laptop ever, so it's sort of a safe device to update. But my main work computer is like, no, that's never getting beta software on it. Not happening.
Have you tried Sidecar?
I can't, because my Mac Pro doesn't support... Well, oh, okay. I haven't tried it. I'd forgotten that I could do it from my MacBook, but I can't do it from my Mac Pro, because the Mac Pro isn't supported.
Okay.
Because it's only a certain number of new devices. Yeah, I should give that a try. I've also not updated my iPad. I don't know if that's a requirement.
It probably is, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would think so. So I will do it. But I've seen some videos of it, and it's quite nice how you get the touch bar integrated with it, even if you have a device that doesn't have a touch bar, which is kind of cool.
And I heard that I read on or listened to a podcast that said basically if you're using with a pencil iPad, then only the pencil responds to this main screen. So you can't use your fingers to touch Mac OS interfaces on the screen. You have to use the pencil. But there are touch areas on the left and right that you can use your fingers that do things like, for configuring certain things to do with the sidecar interface or whatever.
Yeah.
Apparently you can do that. So that's quite cool. But I like the idea of it being baked in and just, I've used that Duet Display before, and that other one that has the little dongle, which I can't remember the name of, Lunar Display, which sort of, they work, but they're not
fine,
perfect.
Yeah,
they're not perfect. And there's always that overhead because they are an additional, resource taking up CPU usage, which I'm sure is going to happen with this, but I would imagine being it baked into the OS, it's going to be much more efficient.
Yeah, I think it's going to have access to stuff to make it more as if you just plugged another screen in. I mean, obviously plugging another screen in uses up more resources as well, because you have more to render, but you don't, like, when I plug in my 4K monitor, I don't notice a hit for performance because I've got another screen in. You just don't think about it, but
no, exactly.
In theory, it is.
So,
I mean, it sounds good. I'm not that fussed about it, because I will rarely use it, because I can't at the moment with my Mac Pro, but if I switch to the new Mac Pro, I guess I could see my old 12.9-inch iPad being used as a display, because it's big enough, and I could just mount it to the bottom, give me access to some of the touch bar stuff, maybe. But I don't really... I'm doing that just because I could, not because I need to. A good announcement. Cool. Useful for some people, but it's not for me, really.
Yep. So the other big change is obviously the iTunes breakup. So we've now got...
Wasn't that great, the presentation, when he started sending like notes and mail into iTunes? That was... I mean, it's really funny. Like, I think I say this every time that we do these WWDC roundups, but the transformation of Craig Federighi has been incredible to watch.
His
first demonstration, he was shaking like a fucking leaf while he was doing it. It was so bad and so awkward to watch, as he was trying to control like Snow Leopard or something, and he's like there doing it, and he's just shaking so much that the mouse is like wobbling while he's demoing it. And it was really
who
awkward.
Was the guy?
And now he's
who was the
like
guy,
universally loved.
I think it was the Photos demo. Was it that guy that was super nervous and there was things going wrong, and he was like having trouble clicking on things? I think it was Photos. There was a guy that was demoing, and I did a tweet saying, this is really awkward to watch. And, you want to not take the piss out of these people, because you wouldn't want to go up there and do what they do. So I was just like, oh, God, I hope he gets through this. Because he was really, you could just see he was shaking so much. I think it might have been to do with pencil stuff, because he was having to be accurate.
Yeah, I don't think it was the Photos.
Oh, okay. He was having to be accurate with what he was doing, but his fingers were... his hands and everything. Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh God, I'm really feeling for this guy. But I know what you mean. When I remember seeing some of Craig's early ones, and he was very, very nervous. And now he's just like, he's like water off
now
duck's
back. Now he's the
back,
best presenter,
you know?
By far.
Yeah. Yeah, and he doesn't get fazed by anything. You know, people will, you know, a lot of these people when they're presenting, because you can see that they're reading. They've obviously practiced what they're doing in case something goes wrong. So we don't have the Michael Bay walk off because the teleprompter stopped working and I can't present and I can't describe what a television does on stage. You know, you think that they're so locked in that any distraction throws them off. But, you know, he'll have someone in the audience go, "We love you, Craig." And he'll be like, "And I love you too." And then he's like straight back into it. You know, it's like, what?
He's
brilliant.
So much better at it. And I mean, he seems like the sort of person that could take over from Tim Cook.
Oh,
whereas none of the others do.
Yeah,
really, to me,
he's got charisma and he's got all that,
exactly.
He's got that, all that stuff that you need, you know.
I think he's done a lot of work over the last few years as well, because he spends a lot of time like with developers at the conference. Like, he always poses for photos and does all that stuff. And I think that's gonna pay off big time for him when the time comes.
Yeah, definitely. No, the new split up and everything. I mean, I like that whole thing about, you know, you plug your iPhone in or your iPad in now and it doesn't suddenly launch an app. You know, they made a big deal out of that. It's like you plug it in and nothing, which is what you want. I mean, the one thing that drives me, always used to drive me crazy on Windows and does drive me crazy on a Mac. The biggest thing that I hate at the moment is that whole, it's just the intrusiveness of everything. You know, especially when your Mac is starting up, or you know, you've rebooted, your different apps are opening, and let's say an app opens and you just want to start using it. And so, you know, my belief is, if I've clicked on Safari, if I've clicked on the Notes app because it's just opened up, or my, you know, everything's starting up in the background, but if I've clicked on that Notes app and I'm doing something in it, I don't want the focus to go. You know, I don't want some other app. Even if another app opens in a window to the right, that's fine. But just
that is awful when you're in full screen mode.
Just keep the focus. Yeah. That drives me insane. And all these pop-ups are happening saying, oh, this app needs updating. And this, I don't, you know. And you're typing and you get that beepy noise because obviously you've suddenly you've shifted to a modal dialogue and you can't type in that because you were in a different... that bugs the hell out of me. So anything that...
What really gets me with that is when I'm in full screen mode, which I use Xcode in full screen all the time. If I open something like Slack and then I go over to full screen mode, back, like I open it and while it's launching, I swipe back and carry on with my work. It then keeps kicking me back. Like, even though nothing is happening, it's like the app just wants to keep stealing focus all the freaking time while it's loading.
Have you ever, when that has happened, done the classic thing with the password? So I've done that classic thing where, you know, I'm in the middle of an app, or I'm in, because I use Outlook as well. I've got my Canary I use for my main mail, and then I've got Outlook for some client stuff that I do. And I've had to type a password into like something something's locked, you know, popped up, like iTunes or whatever has popped up saying, "We need your password." I've gone to type my password, but my focus has shifted to say Slack or something. And so I've typed my password in Slack, and then it's like, great, now I have to change my password everywhere. So I've got to delete that and then change everything. But
no,
yeah,
I've never done that.
I've done that once or twice, and it's like, oh my God, just imagine if you tweeted it or something. Luckily, I've got two-factor on most things now. But yeah, it looks nice. I mean, apparently the podcast app is Catalyst, and TV are proper app kit or UE kit or whatever the hell they've built it with. Because I think the music one has a lot of the code from iTunes in it, so that it...
Yes.
Because there would have been a bit of criticism if they just ported the music app from iOS and lost all the, you know, nice features that people like.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to work well. I appear to have lost some of my playlists, which I'm not sure why. So I'm going to just load it up again now. Some stuff was missing when I looked at it, but I had just installed it, so I'll see now if it's changed. Nope.
There's also that Find My App, which is a bizarre name.
Oh, yeah, they've all turned up now. Yeah, it's fine.
Oh, cool. Yeah, the Find My App, which is this new sort of mixture of Find Friends and... Find My Phone, which looks quite nice. And I love this Bluetooth thing they've done. So So they've effectively, I mean, I'm guessing obviously this is a you know, new Mac OS and iOS 13. It's not gonna use this weird mesh network for existing OS versions. But basically,
I imagine the mesh network will only work. I guess the mesh networking could work in terms of telling you the result, because it's just an API giving you the result of where stuff is, but
it's
only iOS
13
is going to do the pinging, so it's going to be less useful until people update.
But it's very cool. I mean, so the idea is that, you know, your laptop's offline or your iPad's offline, but it's still got power and its Bluetooth is on, and so it's pinging to a nearby compatible device that can then relay its position back to you, which is interesting. And there's the rumors of them doing their own tile tracking, but I don't know whether that is still happening or whether that's still predicted.
I'm
or whether
sure that
or whether
is happening.
This
and
is,
it'll be happening in September when iOS 13 launches, because it won't work at the moment because no one's using iOS 13.
Yeah,
because it would require the same mesh network.
Yeah, I would love for that to be true, and for that it would be awesome if they could make them smaller and thinner than the tiles, which are already quite small.
Yeah.
I've had problems with those recently. I was complaining to them the other day about it. I've had a set of keys that I couldn't find for ages, spare set of keys for my car. The tile app was telling me, you know, you need to replace the tiles because the battery's low. But I could not find the damn thing because it wouldn't make a noise. You know, for some reason, I've had a few of these tiles that they just don't make the noise. They'll tell you they're nearby, and I've managed to track them down. I realized the app does have this distance type meter. It uses this weird disc. So when you say you want to find it, it shows you the picture, and then around the picture is this ring that gets fuller as you get closer. So you can sort of find out where it is in the vicinity, but it wasn't until I literally picked the keys up that they suddenly started playing. And it's like, that's useful. Great. You know, could have done with that earlier. So it's a little frustrating, but yeah. My wife wasn't too pleased because I emptied the cupboard downstairs thinking the keys were in there, and then realized that the only reason the disc was getting bigger was that it was detecting them from upstairs. and then I found them in a pair of shorts. So it was
nice.
So then when she came back and saw the state of the cupboard, it was like, so did you find them? I said, yep. Where were they? It's not going to make it any better if I tell you. They weren't in the cupboard.
So, it's I'm surprised you don't have smart locks on all your doors.
I have in the office, haven't in the house yet. We are looking at getting the front door replaced because the barrel has gone. So now and again, you come home and you're sort of spinning the key in there several times and you have to do all kinds of weird things to get it to work. So the plan is to get a new door and I'll probably get a smart lock on it.
Yeah, I'm very tempted.
They're very good. I've got the Yale one in the office it doesn't have the... I don't know what's going on with their HomeKit module, but basically it has these interchangeable modules. So you can either have the Yale module, which basically works by having a key fob or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you can have the Z-Wave module, which is the one I've got. So then I've got a little Z-Wave hub in the office attic. But they're supposed to have been a HomeKit. It went on for, you know, 2 years or something. It was released at some point. It was shown at CES or something. But there's supposed to be this HomeKit module that you plug in, and then it will work with the Home app. Because the Z-Wave or Z-Wave security settings, they basically won't let you use your voice to unlock it through Alexa and stuff. So if you can do it through the app, but if you link it through to Alexa and stuff, which I shouldn't have said, but she didn't hear me, it won't work. It won't actually support voice unlocking because the danger is that, you know, you can your kids or something could say something, oh, unlock the office, and suddenly the office is open. So that's probably a good idea. Speaking of that, I mean, we've just got our garage door replaced with a roller door, one of these roller shutters.
Which comes
with a little key fob. And we've already had this. I've been trying to make it internet enabled, but I can't get the right module to work with it at the moment. But one of the problems with the key fob is that it has these four buttons. The button one is the one that you press once and the garage door opens. Button two is the one to close it, but with two you have to hold it down, I guess, for safety, you know, to make sure there's no one trapped or anything.
Right.
So, but what you've got to be careful of is a similar problem, which is she left the house the other day or something. I think one of the kids grabbed the keys for the car, and as they've grabbed it, they've obviously pressed the button one, and so the garage door just opens. So you drive off. You can drive off without realizing that your garage door is just open. Not that there's anything of interest, but I was suddenly thinking about that problem that if I do internet enable this thing and the kids find out that you can just say open the garage door, you know, what happens? Because I've already had this, I get this weird thing at the moment where have you ever with HomeKit and Siri and stuff with lights where you might say turn on certain lights, and then you realize it's turned on all lights or turned off
yes.
all
lights. Yes, and that is really annoying when your wife's asleep with your firstborn.
Yes.
And then you've set all the lights to 100% brightness. That that doesn't go down well.
or like I did, where for some reason I think I was trying to change the color of my desk lights. I've got those strip lights on the back of the desk to give like a little uplighter effect. And I was trying to change the color. Then I get a text message from Hannah at one point going, "Why is the house lights blue?" I'm like, "What?" Go into the house and the like, kids' lights, the upstairs lights, the sick room's all blue. Because it misunderstood me. And the other day I had a weird thing with, I've linked up my Daikin, however you pronounce it, air conditioner with this little, which has already got an app. So it's already Wi-Fi and it's got an app that controls it. But there's this Sensibo device you can buy. It's like a little remote. And it's you connect it to your Wi-Fi, you plug it in, you put it near within the vicinity of your air conditioner, and you tell it what air conditioner you've got, and it can basically control all the settings. And then you can link that to the Echo. And through Homebridge, I've linked it to Home App. So I can now say, you know, dingus, turn on the office air conditioning. Home App is great, works fine. For some reason, if I tell Echo to say, turn on the office air conditioner, for some reason, one of my office spotlights comes on along with the air conditioner. And I have no idea why. It's not grouped. It's not, there's no weird settings. I've checked everything. But for some reason, only one spotlight comes on and the air conditioner comes on. And if I say turn it off, the air conditioner goes off and the one spotlight goes off. No idea what's going on. It's very weird.
But, one of the things I've mentioned many times before is the issue that I always have with my HomePod, because I have a HomePod in my bedroom and a HomePod in my kitchen. And my kitchen has no HomeKit-enabled lights in it, but my bedroom does. If I'm in the kitchen and I say, turn the lights on or turn the lights off, then all the lights in the house turn on or off. If I'm in the bedroom and I say, turn the lights on or off, it only does the ones in the bedroom. And that really irritates me, because then I have to say, turn on all the lights or turn off all the lights.
Yeah.
But I don't have to say that downstairs, and it annoys me that the difference is...
Yeah.
They shouldn't be different. They should have the same command. And, like, if I say turn on the lights in the kitchen, it should say there aren't any lights in the kitchen. And I have to say turn off all the lights. It would be how it should work in my mind. But it's annoying because it broke. Like, before I had the HomePod, if I say turn on the lights to my phone or my watch, then it does them throughout the house. And that's where I get problems, because sometimes I'll say to Siri in the bedroom, turn on the lights, and want it to just turn them on there. But my phone or my watch has responded instead, and so it turns them on everywhere. And it's like, oh, why is it different? Why can't it just be the same command everywhere? Very irritating, very annoying.
Well, we get. I get a similar thing with Echo. With you know, it's got this thing where they can communicate with each other to see which one was the closest one and respond. So what bugs me about Siri and the Echo as well is that they could be a bit too verbose when they're responding sometimes. So what will happen is we've got this Disney circle thing for internet times, sort of, you know, turns off devices or blocks devices and blocks certain games or things for the kids when it's bedtime and stuff. And so their Echo devices are set to, you know, not work after a certain time in the evening. So what I want to happen is that when I'm upstairs and I say, dingus, you know, what's the weather like tomorrow? Or dingus, do this or do that or send an announcement or whatever. I just want the closest one to respond, and that's it. But what happens is, because they're intercommunicating with each other and the kids' ones are not connected, they start responding with, I'm sorry, I'm not connected to the internet right now. And so you get all this weird voice coming from different rooms because they can't. And all I want it to do is just do nothing. You know, it's fine to do nothing. If it's a setting or something, that would be awesome, you know, but just do nothing. And it's a bit like with Siri where you say, you know, hey, dingus, turn whatever lights on or turn on the sitting room. And she'll go, some lights didn't respond, and give you this big, you know, check the Home App for details. It's like, it's fine. It's fine. Those lights were off. I don't care about those. You know, you don't need to respond all the time. You could just do a little ping or something and tell me, or come up on a push notification or whatever. I don't need you to tell me all the time.
Yeah, there's a long way to go to improve that stuff.
Yes. Right. What else should we talk about? iOS 13?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dark
finally,
dark
finally,
mode.
Dark mode. God, I've been waiting all my life. Yes. I'm going to be really hypocritical because I am using dark mode.
There you go.
I tell you, the one thing I do like about it is I prefer the darkened notification bubbles on my lock screen. That's the one thing that I'm like, you know what? That looks nicer. But as for the rest
now,
of
what
it...
What happens in Safari private view in Safari? Because that was always the challenge. What happens
that
there?
That is always my bugbear. They look identical, but when you've got a private tab, it just has the words... let me do it right now so I can get the text exactly
porn.
Right.
automatically defaults to porn.
So you click private and it says private browsing mode, Safari won't remember the page you visited, blah, 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 blah. And then when you create your tab, above the favorites icons, it has a big thing that just says private browsing mode. Safari won't remember the pages you visited, your search history, or your autofill information after you close the tab in private browsing mode. And the bar is maybe slightly darker. I don't think it is. But then if I use this, there's no indication that it's private mode now while I'm using it. And now if I close that... Yeah, I mean, they look identical. It's maybe ever so slightly darker, but the difference is you would not notice, I don't think.
Well, I haven't installed...
It's the same. It's the same. So all it is really is that when there are no tabs, you get a big thing that says private browsing mode. And when you've got an empty tab, it says private browsing mode at the top. But it's not ideal, in my opinion. But there we go. I guess I've just stopped watching porn on my phone. That's
Now, is dark mode properly dark? Is it black? Or is it just a dimmed...
Is it like a dark
grey?
It's black.
It is black.
And then highlights are in grey.
Okay.
So cool. I think they demoed it in the keynote, or it might have been the platform State of the Union thing. There are differing levels of darkness. And so when you've got two iPad apps running side by side, the backgrounds will always be like 90% black. Whereas if you've got one full screen, it's 100% black. And that's because there's a dividing line between the two that obviously needs to be darker. So things like that, they've thought quite a lot about how it works everywhere. So... the backgrounds change, which, I mean, for developers makes it a bit of a pain because you need to say what your background is and then it will automatically adjust it. It's not necessarily you're going to get the exact one that you ask for. Much the way that navigation bar tint colors work. Like, you can say, make this bar red, but that doesn't mean it'll be exactly red. It might change.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And it seems to be the same with backgrounds. But yeah, at least I'm on the XS Max with my with iOS 13. And everything is fully black. Like, if I look at Safari, the background of the...
Yeah, what happens there? So what happens with the web pages?
Well, the new tab interface... so to start with, when you first open it and it's... like, there's nothing there, you've just got your favourites and frequently visited. That's pitch black. The tab bar is a little bit less black, as is the navigation bar. And then the place where you enter your URL is lighter still. So it's like three colours.
Okay.
But websites are, obviously, they're websites. They are the colour that they are. they're white, mostly. But there's been, for a while, there is a command that web developers can use to detect if there is dark mode running or not, because they have that on the Mac already.
Okay.
So a website can infer whether your device is running in dark mode, and then display a different thing. But obviously most websites don't because it's fairly new. But I guess we'll see more of that. Like, if I go to the BBC News website, it's white with a red banner, which is how it is everywhere else. So yeah, it's exactly the same as you would expect it to be.
Okay, so then my other question is, do you use the native mail app?
I do, and that's black.
That is
text.
Black, so when you're viewing emails, that's going to be interesting.
Not, and how does HTML email, though. Because if it's HTML it's not, because it's HTML.
Okay.
I don't really get any HTML email. All my normal emails are black,
cool.
And the highlighting is purple and aqua by the looks of it.
I think the only one that I didn't like the look of, which is probably the same on the Mac actually, is the calendar app. Always looks weird because of all the colours with the dark background. But that's cool about the mail app, because some of these third-party mail clients try to do these dark modes, and they try to sort of intelligently adapt the emails as they come in, and they never got it right, you know. And I use this Canary app, and it basically just lets you say, no, I don't want to use the dark mode for the actual background of emails, just use the normal white background. So you don't get any of those issues. But yeah, that's cool then. It sounds like they've done a good job of that then.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's fine. I mean, I quite like the music app, looks nice. in dark mode. It's got a nice highlight color on it and stuff. They've also, and this was mentioned more in the State of the Union. I don't know if you remember or if you've looked before, but the blurred backgrounds that we've had access to since I think iOS 8 was when we got access to them, but they've been around since iOS 7. There were only three. There was like light, extra light, and dark. And then
Right.
they were blurred automatically. Now there's about 20 of them, and you get like different
Oh, wow.
materials and stuff that you can put it on top of. So the blurs are all subtly different. And the blur in
Nice.
the music app looks really good. And they've got a new font as well. Or they've changed the fonting when you're looking at a song and stuff. And the iconography looks way better because they've got this new SF icons thing. Again, that
Right.
wasn't in the keynote, it was in the State of the Union. But they've basically
Need
made
to
one and
watch
a
that.
half thousand icons, which developers can just go, oh, I want open dot envelope icon, for example. And then it gives them
Oh,
that
wow.
icon. But then they've done it in every single font weight, and you can apply colors to it with dark mode and stuff like that. So it automatically changes them. So you can basically
That's
you
nice.
get all the icons you could possibly want for free. You don't have to use like icons8.com or anything like that anymore. Don't have to embed the PNGs into your app. You just go, I want this one and I want it in this weight. Because being able to match them specifically to the font weight is really, really nice. And the music app definitely shows that because they're a little bit bolder than they are in other places or were previously. But they look really nice. So it's a good update. Good
I think I need
update.
to watch the. I'll watch that State of the Union stuff. I've just updated my WW, WWDC
Oh,
app.
yeah. The developer State of the Union is always one of the best presentations, because that's where you get the actual developer stuff rather than just, oh, look at all this cool shit we added. It's more like, oh, this is how you use some of this stuff. And their demo of Swift UI, I mean, we'll come to that later, but the demo of Swift UI is nuts. Really, really good. But yeah, so dark mode is good. I am using it. I am enjoying it. I am a hypocrite. But yes, and I will be updating my apps to take support of it via iOS 13's launch.
Cool.
I mean, from a business point of view, I love it because it's just generated me a load more revenue.
Yeah,
Because I
exactly.
can go to clients and say, oh, you need to be updated for dark mode.
Other new stuff they've done, volume indicator changes, that's pretty minor, I guess.
Oh, but it's so much better. So much better.
New background location and Bluetooth detection for apps that are doing sneaky things in the
That is
background.
terrifying. Yeah.
Did you see the Did you see the demo of the Siri voice? That's really nice. The where
Yeah.
they've done something with AI so that you don't get that cinema phone type thing. You know, when you phone the cinema, it goes, "You've ordered three tickets to," and it sort of works out the timing and
I could
the
probably do
way
a
that
live
words
demo
are
of it now
said.
because I've not tried it. I mean, yeah, okay. Tell a story.
I'm certain you've heard it before.
Oh, that was Irish Siri. I forgot I have Irish Siri on mine, and he's been changed as
Oh,
well. He sounded way better.
I've got the female Irish voice because it reminds me of the character in or the AI in Iron Man, you know, Friday, whatever it's called.
I
So
always
yeah,
call mine Dougal.
and it sounds well, it sounds so it just sounds it's a much
But it sounds
softer
much more
voice. It sounds
natural.
nicer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. I,
Well,
what I
the
loved
new
about it
series
as
sounds
well
good.
is whenever you install the new Mac OS updates and you do like you change to. Like you know the Irish voice or whatever. I remember when I first did it, and then it starts talking, and it's like, oh my God, this is bloody awful, because it's downloading the real voice. So
Oh, yes, yeah.
it does that weird simulation to start with while it's downloading, and it's like, Jesus, this sounds really really bad, you know. And then about 10 minutes later or whatever, once it's downloaded, you try it again, and it sounds amazing.
I guess that's probably gone now because now it's doing it with like neural networks and crazy shit. So I guess it doesn't need to download like all the voices like it used to. I
I don't
guess
know.
now
It's
it just
just
does it. I don't really know. Let's
it's
see.
it
I've
sounds
changed
really
mine.
good.
Oh
I'm
no, it's
Siri,
still
your
downloading.
virtual assistant.
Oh, we've got an Indian accent now. That's new.
It sounds re yeah. I mean, it sounds really good what they've done, and they've done that thing where you can like instantly reply to messages if you've got AirPods in and stuff. And it
Yeah.
just yeah, it sounds like they've made some really nice improvements there, which is cool.
The background Bluetooth thing bears mentioning because I have Facebook on my phone mainly to see when there are events at my board game shop because they only post them there, which is incredibly irritating. I don't use Facebook at all. I've got no friends on it. Don't use it. I just use it for that one thing. And when I was using another app yesterday, I think it was just in Mail or something, I suddenly got a pop-up saying, Facebook would like to use your Bluetooth. I'm like, no.
You are? What? What?
It's terrifying.
I mean, it's just... I remember
I get
a year
how
or so
they do
ago.
It. I know what it's for, because you can... There are very few ways to wake up an app in the background, but you can do it with Bluetooth. And so all it's doing is ranging for Bluetooth devices. I mean, there are two ways they could be doing it. Either they're doing it just so they can wake up for 20 seconds to do whatever they want to do in the background, which is creepy. Or, worst case, they're scanning all the devices around you, saving their like Mac codes, so they can then determine where you are based on that. Like, and that information could be uploaded and shared elsewhere. So if I'm in Starbucks and it recognizes someone else's thing, but they're on Facebook, so it knows their GPS location, it now knows my exact location because it scanned the Bluetooth devices in the same room. And that is fucking terrifying. So
that's what I thought it was for, because they do this whole thing of your friends are nearby. And so I was wondering whether they're using a combination, because I had to do an app recently which was using geolocation stuff, where it does a similar thing of the idea is to find out if certain people are nearby, basically. And I had to use all kinds of tricks to get it to work, because there was a bug in iOS that caused me a real nightmare. But and they needed accuracy of like 50 meters, 25 meters in terms of, you know, position. And so I was trying to use all kinds of tricks to get it to work properly. And I got it to work fine with the geolocation. But one of the tricks I was going to end up using was a Bluetooth method of actually having the app communicate, you know, with other people who've got the same app. So it could do a Bluetooth connection to get much more accuracy to say, okay, geolocation, we've got you in this building, but Bluetooth wise, you're literally 5 meters away from this person type thing. Yeah. Which obviously you should know if you're 5 meters away, but that's what I figured they're doing. But yeah, that's the danger with this stuff, is just the level. Because I never thought about it like that, like what you've just said. I thought about it as in, oh, it's using Bluetooth to just see if anyone else is nearby who has the Facebook app installed that it can Bluetooth connect to and that might be one of your friends. But what you've just said is completely different and scary, which is that it's actually, you know, mapping all these different devices so it can work out, you know, your Alexas and all these other things. And then, like you say, cross-check that with other people. And that's
because if you don't give it permission to run the location in the background, then the background won't run in the location won't run in the background. And that's, you know, that seems like logically you think to yourself, well, that's fine then. They don't know where I am, but they can, because if someone else has got location and their device is open and it can map all the Bluetooth devices near them, then it knows that you're near them. So you must be within 50 meters or so. And that's that's scary.
Remember when they introduced the battery thing, which shows you the breakdown over, you know, 4 hours, 7 days, whatever version that was in, 8 or 9 or 10, whatever it was in. And I remember tweeting about this because it came up when I was checking, and it said, you know, apps that have used background activity. And one of them said Facebook, and the background activity was background audio. And you're like, wait a second.
Oh, yes. So
Now, apparently,
the old silent noise.
Exactly. They were using the silent noise thing to keep the app running in the background. But of course, this didn't help the conspiracy theory of, well, actually, they're listening to all our conversation, which is why, you know, I was talking to you about going on holiday and now I'm seeing holiday ads in my Facebook feed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't believe my sister still believes that's going on, because she'll say, oh, I was talking about this. I swear I was talking about this on Monday and it came up on Tuesday in my Facebook feed. And it's like, yeah, but you're not taking into account that there's so many data points that they've got on you. For example, you know, we're now looking around for summer holidays. So we would have been looking around for summer holidays last year. So the likelihood is that, you know, it's like the memories thing in Facebook. We're having a conversation about summer holidays. So I suddenly go to Facebook. Oh my God, there's a holiday advert in my feed. Well, of course there is, because last year you were looking for summer holidays, or you went on summer holiday. And so it's just data. You know, it's all these different data points, or you've gone to a certain website or whatever. You've done a search on this other website, or you're with your wife and your wife was searching and she's a friend and she's in the same vicinity. So there's just all this data that they have that you just can't even comprehend. But yeah, very scary stuff.
I'm just looking in my screen time at the
moment.
It should
be very interesting.
And there's nothing from Facebook showing up at all now, because I've not opened it for 2 days, and in the last 2 days I haven't used it, so all the background stuff seems to be actually shut down. Because sometimes it would be running in the background and you'd be like, how? Because I turned off background fetch and I don't have these permissions.
Yes.
And I guess they're doing it with Bluetooth, because you can't turn Bluetooth off on a per application basis. But I guess you can
I've
now.
I've had that before. Yeah, I've had that before where I have, I've just checked my battery health and it's 93%. That's really good to know that the I've lost 7% of my maximum capacity in, 9 months or something? 7 months?
That's interestingly, if I if you go into privacy now in the settings app and then go, there is now a Bluetooth setting box there, and then it shows you which apps have requested the ability to use Bluetooth. And predictably, mine are Facebook and YouTube. YouTube did the same thing.
Yeah, because at the moment, because iOS 12 at the moment doesn't ask for permission, does it? It doesn't say.
No,
that's interesting then, yeah. Hold on, what do you say, YouTube? Oh, yeah. I guess. Oh, maybe that's to detect devices like.
It was doing it in the background, though. I haven't opened it. It was the same thing. It just asked in the background.
Chromecast.
I guess it could be used for Chromecast and stuff like that. But
It should be interesting to see if there's any screenshot. I mean, there'll probably be a load of screenshots from developers now in terms of, you know, certain apps that are doing weird things and.
Yeah.
All these sub things that are popping up in iOS 13 should be that should be interesting.
But in terms of stability, I've installed it on my main phone because I was doing some app testing and it works fine. So it's I've not run into any bugs apart from in the default mail app. Sometimes the animation doesn't work properly, but apart from that, it's all running fine. So it's probably fairly safe for people to install the beta.
I think the public beta is next month, isn't it?
Yeah, July.
I think once that comes out, there'll probably be an updated developer beta, and I'll probably install that.
Yeah, it'll probably be like developer beta 3 by then.
Yeah, exactly, which is usually where I usually install sort of 2 or 3. It's very tempting. I just want to... But also, you have to install it via Xcode or iTunes or something, don't you?
Yeah. This version. It's weird. It makes it sound like it's a restore profile. But if you go to iTunes or in the Finder in Catalina, you hold down Alt or Option, I forget which it is.
Right.
Option, sorry. And then you click on Check for Updates, and then it will let you choose the IPSW file and do a upgrade, not a complete wipe and restore. Because when I first saw it, I was like, there's no way I'm doing that.
No.
But yeah, there's no download profile for some reason. I don't know why. I think I quipped at the time on Twitter that it's ironic that they've killed iTunes and then they require you to use iTunes to upgrade the device. But there you go.
Interesting. And what about Catalina? I guess is just a download as well, is it? It's not a.
That's just a normal. Yeah,
you just. It's a normal download. You just install.
No, it's not a. It's not a download. It's a profile that you install and then it will do it through the automatic updates.
Okay. Cool.
And the same with WatchOS. And the same with tvOS as well, I think, but not iPad or iOS.
So have you installed the new watchOS?
No, I've not done the watch and I've not done the iPad. I will do the iPad soon, but I don't like changing the watch one because I do a lot of health stuff and I'm on a bit of a health kick at the moment. And the last thing I want is to suddenly have my watch not work properly because that would really annoy me.
You can't go back on the watch, can you? You can, at least on an iPhone, you can put it back in whatever they call it, DFU mode or whatever. Even though they say you can't downgrade, you can. But with the watch, you have to send it back to them, apparently. You can't.
Yeah, it does not downgrade. And to be fair, I mean, let's talk about the watch quickly now, because I mean, there's not a huge amount there.
No.
There are new things like the App Store, the independent apps, the app development. You can be done with SwiftUI, so it's a bit better and easier than it was previously. But none of that stuff is going to make a difference until September because there's no apps for it yet because there aren't any independent apps for it yet. I'm not working on any projects that require independent apps and I've not got any great watchOS app ideas that I've been waiting for this for. So there's no real need for me to install it. I don't need to do my menstrual tracking on my watch because I'm good for that. Ironically, I built one of the first menstrual trackers for watchOS, Natural Cycles. Back in, I guess, the Series 2 model, it must have been. And the new watch faces, I'm sure they're lovely, but it's not worth potentially bricking my watch just to get a new face. So I'm going to leave that for now.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks good. I mean, I haven't worked on any watch stuff in terms of coding, so I wouldn't know how good the improvements are, but I mean
they are much better.
they sound it, yeah, but it will be nice to see what comes out of these independent watch apps that we don't have, you know, and obviously SwiftUI to get some much nicer watch apps, because I mean I use mine for health stuff and running and things like that, but there is certainly a huge lack of good watch apps. And all of them still seem to be that whole thing of, you know, I get so sick of launching an app on the watch that I haven't launched for a while, and it says, please log in on your iPhone. And you're like, oh, come on. I mean, seriously? You know, so it'll be nice to see what they do there in terms of the detach, this independent stuff, and how that can work. So, yeah, cool. We can quickly go over iPad OS. It's a marketing name, really, isn't it? It's still iOS.
It really is. It's amazing how many people are like, oh, will my iPad app still run? Like, I've had clients.
I know.
Oh, are we all right on iPad OS? Like, I want to say, do the old builders quote.
Double the price.
Yeah, I could probably get it running for September on iPad OS. It's such a name change.
Exactly. I loved the people that didn't really do any research or look at any of the information or even listen or read any of the slides and were like, oh, great. So they've added external drive support to the iPad OS and we can plug our USB drives and things in there, but I can't do it on an iPhone. It's like, yes, you can, because it's in iOS as well, because it's the same thing. They're not going to have... death thing in there that says, if iPad allow this piece of code to work, for God's sake. But yeah, I mean, it's nice that they've done that because it shuts a lot of people up who were complaining about that as well. The mouse and keyboard support through accessibility, you get that really weird mouse pointer because it's an accessible thing. So it's like a big circle, but, again, keeps some people happy who are intent on trying to make their iPad into a laptop. I guess, no Xcode for iPad, as most of us thought.
God.
Yeah, I mean...
horrible. I mean, I can see that's going to be down the line now we've got SwiftUI because it could very easily work on an iPad or something, but I still don't like the idea of it at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think my issue with it was I could never see the current version or capability of Xcode on an iPad because there's just too much... too much is reliant on it not being sandboxed, and you need access to things like you need Git and you need terminal and you need to be able to do install things and whatever. Whereas with Swift UE, you could sort of see I don't want to say Xcode like, but you could almost see a new, almost like a completely new IDE born off that.
That is
designed
Xcode Touch.
Just because the thing that always scares, I mean, they have improved Xcode a lot. I remember, a few years ago when you used to launch it and it comes up with all crazy shit, just all this detail about how it's compiling and everything, and scares the life out of you. And they've sort of hidden all that stuff away now. But it's almost getting to the point where they could do what they've done with iTunes, where they could say, right, we're going to have a new version of Xcode or a new thing, a new development environment built around Swift UE technology that just simplifies it completely. So you don't see any of that shit because now you don't need to know any of that stuff. It's really easy to just tick a few check boxes and deploy to all these different devices using the same code. And that then makes sense because, that would be really cool. It would be nice to be able to play around with code on an iPad and actually launch, have code on the left-hand side, have an iPhone simulator almost just running, or just a view running on the right-hand side that's an iPhone screen on the iPad, or even run it straight to your iPhone device would be incredible, over Wi-Fi, just to mess around with code. If we're going to cover Swift UE.
Yeah. Very nice. Very, very nice.
Yeah, the thing for me, I've not done, all my stuff is cross-platform stuff, so I don't do pure...
Jason's horrible.
Yeah, I don't do the pure Swift stuff, but I always hated Objective-C. Swift I liked, but still, I look at some of the code to do things like creating, list views and things in Swift, and this looks like so much code. And, to have to write to do something that should be really simple, and to see the demos they did on stage, which I'll follow up with watching some of the other videos to see more on it, was just amazing how much... And it made sense. Swift makes more sense to me than Objective-C anyway. There's still some stuff I hate about it in terms of the way they use certain characters and things. It just drives me crazy. But looking at that Swift UE code was like, wow. I mean, you can see it, you can read it, you can see the structure of it. It just makes perfect sense. And the fact that he was able to put a simple view together with about, 10 lines of code instead of about 200 just looked awesome. So...
They in the State of the Union, they live code a login screen,
right?
And it's just obscene just how quickly it's done, and it's like, oh my god, this is really, really clever. One of the annoying things with it is that it is iOS 13 only, so it'll only be for apps that are, like, if you want it to run on iOS 12, it's not going to. So it's only going to be for new apps, which is fine.
Yeah.
And it's also, a lot of people keep thinking of it as a, oh, it's great, you can write your code once and it runs on everything. No, that is not true. You can write something that will run on everything from the watch right up to the massive iPad or the Mac Pro, but that doesn't mean it'll be good.
No.
You still need to tweak for each platform independently, because obviously what looks good on a watch face does not look good on a giant iPad face. So it's the same language and the same thing across all of them, but it's not write once, run everywhere. It's quicker and easier. But I think one of the best things you can do with it is that it can be used alongside UIKit. It's not all or nothing. So, for example, let's say you have a settings page. You could build that in Swift UI just to get that done nice and quickly, and then it's done.
Right.
But your more complex UI, you can just leave as it is. You don't have to be learning this stuff, which is nice, because when it was first announced, I was like, oh, fuck. And my wife was like, what's wrong? I was like, Apple have just given me a lot of work. Like a lot of reading and a lot of stuff to do. And I looked into it. I was like, I'm not going to be working on apps that are iOS 13 only for a long time. And I can still use this for a few things, but I don't need to worry about it right now. It's not that important. I mean, I'm probably... So I've got a couple of basic apps in the App Store, like Pocket Rocket and Music Tracker. And I will update those and have them be Swift UI, because I don't care if they're iOS 13 only.
Yeah, exactly.
Still run on iOS 12, you just use the old download. But if you're on iOS 13, then it'll automatically do things like dark mode. It'll do all of the, you know, left to right localization, all that kind of stuff that I don't have at the moment. And I think to myself, do I want to try and hard code dark mode into those old apps, or should I learn Swift UI and just do it with those apps? So I think I'll do that. But yeah, it looks great. It looks really good, but it's going to take a while to get used to it, and it's going to take a while for it to be adopted widely.
Yeah, well, the nice thing is, I mean, it's good timing for me, because, you know, I've wanted to do more Swift stuff and get into it, but this will give me an excuse now to actually, you know, look at this, because I've played around with other declarative type frameworks like React and things like that. So I can recognize what it's trying to do, and so it should be quite interesting to play around with it. It's just a shame, obviously, it's not, you can't, well, I suppose you can. There are people that have messed around with Swift for other platforms like Android or whatever, but it's obviously not going to be fully supported by Apple. but it looks fun, definitely. And yeah, I mean, I think what was interesting out of the whole thing was, like, they threw so much. I mean, it was just ridiculous. But, you know, they've obviously, Swift UI is where they want everyone to go.
Yeah.
But they've done this thing with Catalyst where it's like, you know, here's a quick leg up to get your apps working on a Mac, and then you can learn this other stuff, you know, ready to transition over eventually. I mean, with the uptake of iOS 12 and the devices they're supporting with 13, I can't imagine it would be, you know, very long until 13 is the way that most people will be doing stuff. That's obviously where they want people to push developers to go. But yeah, it does look very, very cool. So I need to watch some of the demos. And the documentation looks awesome, just going through some of that.
Oh, it's really good, the documentation. Really, really nicely put together. It's like a little, like, you follow it along. It's like tutorial by numbers type thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's where what would be really cool is if they could do something, and maybe what they will with Playgrounds, with the Playgrounds app on the iPad, where you could almost have that, you know, documentation like they've got, but you can actually play with it. You know, what I thought would be really awesome with that documentation, which I know is a lot of work, is you know, as you're looking at the code samples, you can literally change them a bit like you can on some of these other sites like React Native does. So you could actually change the code there, and it changes on the screen next to it. And that's where I could see, not an Xcode Lite or anything, but like Playgrounds with Swift UI support. So you could be throwing interfaces together and playing around with laying out interfaces, almost doing like real-time prototyping of user interfaces, and then just lift that code out and stick it in your project later, you know, and integrate it. That sounds really cool.
I think with those tutorials, they have a download so that you can run them in Xcode. And the idea is that you just do it alongside it. But I know what you mean, though. It would be nice if it was all one integrated thing. In fact, maybe even, I think the documentation can be done like that if you download it, because I think it's just like a documentation format. I'm not sure because I've not tried it, but I think it might possibly work that way. But they definitely come with example projects, because that's how it works.
It's just a shame you can't install Xcode, the new Xcode, on Mojave and do it with that. You have to actually...
You can.
Can you?
Yeah, you can install Xcode 11 on Mojave. I've got it on my Mac Pro.
Oh, I did not.
You just can't. You can't use Catalyst on Mojave. Oh, okay. Because but it needs to run the apps on Catalyst when you run them. But, so you don't get access to that checkbox. But you can do SwiftUI on Mojave.
Oh, cool. Oh, cool. I'll try that then.
Yeah, just not for Mac apps.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant.
But you get all the simulators and all that stuff. That's fine. Nice. But that's the funny thing about Mac development is that there's no Mac simulator because obviously you're running it on a Mac. So you can't run the Catalyst apps in a Mac simulator. You have to be running Catalina in order to run the app. So the checkbox is like grayed out and just says requires iOS 10.15.
Okay. Cool. I'll definitely try that actually because I want to. I'm guessing with Swift GUI you can just do extensions. You can do all the stuff that you could normally do. You know, all the sort of Swift extensions that you can normally write. You can use Swift GUI for those as well.
I believe so. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, it's just interface.
Yeah. Cool. What else do we need to talk about? HomePod got multi-user support apparently. Still not for iPad. I'm
excited to see how that's going to work in terms of. The voice commands and everything and how they're going to set that up, but I'm pleased about that because our iPods are all set, HomePods are all set up with my account, and then my wife has to play some music and then it'll be my music which she doesn't want to hear.
Exactly.
So then she'll start requesting albums which I don't want in my listening history, and then I start getting recommended shite music. So I'm very excited for multi-user support for HomePod. It's going to make a big difference to my household.
I want them to make it work with the family stuff as well, because obviously my kids still haven't worked out that when we take devices off them and hide them or whatever, that they can actually say to the HomePod, you know, hey dingus, where is so-and-so? Where's Leo's iPad or Leo? And it will, you know, start beeping wherever it is. You know, it basically does the Find My Phone type integration. So it'll be really
cool.
Yeah. So what would be cool is if that, you know, they start when there's little squeaky voices saying, where's this? And it will say, sorry, I can't help you, you know, but I can say it and it will then work. You know, that would be really cool. But yeah, I know what you mean. Mine's, I think the one I've got in the sitting room, I've turned off all of the, I've turned off some of the links to personal information so they can't like add calendar appointments and things.
Yeah.
But the one in the office is linked up. So yeah, I didn't want to start getting music messed up by stuff that they're selecting.
Yeah, I mean it's funny what you say about the multi-use support not for iPad. And I guess the distinction is if it is a fixed device, you can have multi-users. But if it's a portable one, you can't.
Yeah.
Because tvOS also got multi-users, which is again very good for watching TV shows and stuff. We don't have that much to worry about because we don't use the TV app that much. We just use Netflix, and now you've got profiles on there that you can switch between. But it used to be that I got recommended all kinds of rubbish that my wife watched. To be fair, I do get TV. The TV app does have a load of recommendations for things that she's watched through other apps, which is irritating for me, but not a huge deal. We don't use our Apple TV that much, but that is a fixed device. The HomePod is a fixed device.
Yeah,
I guess that's why they get multi-users. Whereas if you want multi-users on an iPad, buy multiple iPads. That's
I know. I get their argument of what they're trying to get you to do. But when you've got small kids and they've got homework and stuff, and they want to use your iPad or they want to, you know, use your
and
iPad
is,
to watch something.
It is annoying when you think that there is multi-users in iPad with Classroom, and they're trying to pitch it as being a bit more like macOS, and macOS has multi-users. Like I can see why they should do it. But from a business decision, I can see why they don't.
you know, what I would like is to have, it would be multi-user support, but you know, like the guest user that you get on macOS, which I've never used.
Yeah.
But it would be nice, like if I've got my iPad and the kids are bored in the car or whatever, and they're saying, can I watch something in your iPad? Yes, they normally just go into Netflix or whatever. But what would be nice is if you can just tap a screen, I can just switch it to a profile I've created or a user I've created called watching TV or something. And then it switches over and it's got like the TV app, the Netflix app, you know, whatever else, iPlayer or something, and they're not going to get my push notifications. They're not going to get other things popping up and stuff, you know, interfering. It's just they can just get on with that. That's what I'm after, really. It's that sort of thing.
The guest mode would work well. I've used it a couple of times when I've had like my nephew over, just give him my laptop and just in guest mode, just gives him access to Safari basically.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, but, that would be useful.
Yeah.
What else? Sign in with Apple was good.
Yeah, that's really, really good. I'm very, very pleased about that.
Yeah.
Very pleased. Very clever.
Email addresses. Yeah, unique email addresses per app.
So yeah.
The amount of stuff there and routing there of email that they're doing is going to be phenomenal. And I guess the only not stickler, but the insistence they've made is that if your app has existing social sign-ins, then it has to include sign-in with Apple.
I'm very happy about that.
Well, so am I. And then the second thing they've said is they suggest that you put the sign-in with Apple at the top of the list, but yeah, it's not a prerequisite, but obviously it's a air quote suggestion to help you get approved. But yeah, very interesting. But what the only thing that made me wonder about that is that they've said, you know, if your app allows signing in with Twitter and signing with Facebook, you've got to do this.
Or Google.
Now, I know that specifically they mean the social account sign-ins with the little buttons that say sign in with Facebook. Yeah. But it just got me wondering, does that mean the Facebook app has to have sign in with Apple?
No.
Exactly. But it could be hysterical. You know, Facebook get their app rejected because they've got the ability to sign in with Apple. Facebook and haven't added sign in with Apple. That would be awesome. But yeah, I get what they're trying to do. But yeah, it's good. It's a, yeah.
From a developer point of view as well, it's a lovely API because you just say, put button, and that's it.
Yeah.
In SwiftUI, yeah, it's literally just like one line of code, and now you've got to sign in with Apple button.
You don't have to do, yeah, you don't have to do, you know, sign up screens. You don't have to do login screens. You don't have to do validation. You don't have to do resetting passwords.
They press the button, and it lets them in or it doesn't. And it's nice. But it also sends a little signal to go if they think it could possibly be a bot.
Ah, okay.
Like they automatically get rid of bots from their own side, obviously, that they want to get rid of. But if they've got one, and apparently what they're doing is they look at what other apps they've got installed, usage patterns, all that kind of stuff, to then sort of highlight to you if they think that, in their own words, maybe it needs a second look. So I guess like if you download an iPhone, if you get a new iPhone, you set it up, you skip all the options, you go to the App Store, you download this app and then try and sign in, like that would probably flag it because it's like, well, this isn't behaving like a normal user. They've not downloaded anything else. They've not completed sign up. They've not done this. I would have loved this when I was doing my online game Wallaby, because we had so many problems with fake accounts because people would create fake accounts to try and get more of the in-game currency and then trade it between themselves. And it was always a nightmare trying to prove it. And if we'd had sign-in with Apple as the only sign-in option, which I would have done, it'd be like, that's that problem solved.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm guessing that they probably got some spamming capability as well for the same app, because I suddenly thought the other day, when I heard about the fact that they're doing the unique addresses and it's unique per app, and obviously they're routing the mail around, I thought, you'd never get it approved, but could you create an app that basically allows you to create throwaway email addresses by using the sign in with Apple option to generate? Do you know what I mean?
So, no.
You sign in several times from the same app and it gives you random email addresses that you can then use with these different services that you might want to use. But obviously, it would never get approved.
I think the email's always the same if it's the same account in the same app.
Right, yeah, that's what I figured.
So if I sign in with Apple, it'll give me a random thing. And then if I sign out and sign back in again, it's still going to give me the same email because it's still the same app.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that
just
makes
means
sense.
That you can't... If I sign in with I don't know, Apple to one app and then another one, they can't cross-reference to see if I'm the same person because they'd have different emails.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just love the fact that they just don't give a shit about collecting data, and this sort of craps all over everyone else who just wants to suck the data out of you and sell you. And Apple are just like, yeah, we don't care about that. You can just, it's an anonymous email. Don't worry about it.
I mean, I don't ever use the sign in with Facebook or sign in with Google stuff anywhere because I don't like it and I know how it works. And so I never use it. And there have been a few times though where I've downloaded an app and that is the only option. And so I normally delete those apps and don't use them. But if I really need to, then I have like a fake Facebook account that I use for testing that I use. But I begrudge having to do it. And this will be so much nicer. Even for ones where there is the option to use a normal account, I'd much rather use this because I don't really want definitely. To give my email or details anyway. So it's much nicer to be able to have it as a separate thing, to not have to create accounts everywhere, because
yes,
it's not difficult. And you've got two options. Well, I have two options, which is either to sign in with a username and password that I use for lots of stuff that I don't care about, so that if the password gets compromised, I use the same everywhere. It doesn't matter because none of the others are that important. Or to sign up and then add all the details to one password. And it's like, oh, can I be asked spending 2 minutes setting up a login in one password for this website that I don't even know if I'm going to use again?
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. So having this button just to be able to go bing is going to be great. I'm very excited for it. Very happy.
Sounds really good. Sounds very, very cool.
The only thing that we missed with the HomePod was the handoff for the audio, which I thought was really good.
Yes.
It's a shame that it doesn't work. Like, I can't hand off from my iPhone to my Mac because that would be far more useful to me. Because I don't have a HomePod in my office. But I love the fact that you just literally tap your phone like an Oyster card reader on your HomePod and then it'll just transfer the music or phone call over. And the same on the way out as well. I think that is a really, really nice feature. Implemented reminds way better than I would have done it.
Yeah, it reminds me of, remember, was it Minority Report, where they have like the screen, they have a screen up with some data and they slide like a little piece of plastic, like a little glass. They sort of slide it into the screen, and when they pull it out, the data's on the glass, and then they walk away with it. So it sort of reminds me of that sort of thing, which is pretty cool. I just wish with this interaction between them, this came up yesterday, and then I realized, I was thinking, why didn't this work? And then I realized, of course, that's why it didn't work. This thing they did recently, I think it was in iOS 12, where you can you can have your phone, and you can say to your phone, "Hey Dingus, play Moana in the sitting room," and it will then play it on the sitting room TV. But what it's doing is airplaying it. Now, technically, what it should be doing is AirPlay toing it, so it's not actually streaming it from your phone. It should be, you know, using the instruction from your phone, but then AirPlay toing it from the direct URL to play on the Apple TV.
I thought it did work that way.
No, it does work that way from the phone. That's fine. I did it from the phone the other day, and it worked great. Where it's not working is from HomePod. So if I say, so yesterday I walked into the sitting room, and you know, Rosie wanted to watch it, and so I was like, right, let's put it on. So I said, "Hey Dingus, into the room, play Moana," and what it actually played was the album. It played the music. It didn't play the movie on the Apple TV. And the difference is if I said the same thing to my phone, it would play the movie. And I don't get it, because it's not, my understanding is it's not AirPlaying directly from.
No, it's not. No,
it's using AirPlay too. So maybe something went wrong, and I'll try it again. But
maybe you just need to say "play the film Moana" rather than
"play
Moana."
Yeah.
It's disambiguation. It's getting a bit confusing.
Yeah,
it's
hopefully it's just that. I'll try it again. But if it's not the case, it's those little things that just frustrate me, because it's like the technology's there. Do you know what I mean? It's there. I should be able to say, "Hey Dingus, you know, open YouTube on Apple TV," and it will just open the app. You know.
Mm.
The capability is there. There's nothing technically stopping them doing it, and it's a bit like that with handoff. You know, yes, I think the interface is great that you can just tap it. I think you can tap it to transfer it, basically to continue playing
from
your phone.
Yeah,
and you can tap it from. But it would just be nice if you're listening to something or watching something on Apple TV. You could say, "Hey Dingus, you know, transfer what I'm watching, whatever you know, continue watching on my phone," or something like that. Because it's your voice. It knows what your device is. It's a bit like my argument with the headphones, when I'll plug my AirPods into my ear and they'll connect to the last device that I used, like the iPad, which is in my bag with the lid closed, when I'm actually holding my phone.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just strikes me that if I'm holding my phone and my phone is active and unlocked and I've just put my AirPods on, I don't want it to connect to my iPad, which is in the bag. That doesn't make sense to me. So it's little things like that, that if they could just, those little tweaks would just make it so nice. But
want to see how hard it is to make a voice assistant, you now can, because there are some new APIs in Siri where you still can't quite get it to work the way that I always want it to. So, for example, I have an app that I've written for myself to log my computer game time. And what I want to be able to say is, "Hey, log 1.2 hours against Skyrim on PC," and it would do it. I can't do that in iOS 12, you could create shortcuts. So
if you'd have to create manually, ones all the different times, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, what I do normally is once I've done a log, it stores it, and then on the lock screen the next day, it'll often prompt me to say, "Hey, do you want to log time against Skyrim?" Okay. And I can tap on it, and it'll automatically fill in Skyrim PC, and then I just put the time in and press go. And so that was good. With iOS 13, it's now possible for you to say something like, log my time, and then it'll say, what game? And you can say, Skyrim. What platform? PC. And what time? 1.2 hours. Which, to be honest, by the time you've done all that, you might as well just pick up the phone and typed it. But it's cool that you can create that. But the problem is that unless you have a very small result set, you're going to have to use strings for those parameters. So when it says what game, and I say Skyrim, it isn't looking up from a finite list. Like, I've got maybe 1,000 games that it could choose from. And I tried using them as an enum and hard coding them into a Siri thing, and it took 2 minutes, and then it rendered all of them in a list saying which one. And I was like, that's not going to work. So you have to do it as a string. And you know how great Siri is at dictation, and some games are quite complicated in terms of their words and stuff. And so you have to say Skyrim, and then somehow you've got to work out taking that voice input and turning it into one of the game titles you have, but there's no APIs for like fuzzy matching or anything like that.
Okay.
So they skip over that bit in all of the demos. It's like, oh yeah, so you just disambiguate and then return, oh, is this the one you wanted? It's like, oh, very, very difficult. But it is making some progress. So you can now, and they call it like a conversational API, so you can...
I was just about to ask, is that a conversational thing?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's good, but it's still not quite there. We're still one step away from being able to do, hey, do this with this with this, and have it work. But
I just realized
surely can't be far off.
I just realized that I was trying to log into something, and my Siri kicked in on the Mac, and now call record has stopped. So you'll have to use your recording of the audio. It's fine. But yeah, that's what I was about to ask you about. Is that the conversational thing? Because I thought the conversational thing might be like Echo does, where it can follow on. So you can say, Dingus, what's the weather like tomorrow? And it'll tell you. And then the blue light stays on for a bit. So you could say, you don't have to say Dingus again. You can just ask another question.
And
I thought it was more like that, so that you could, but that makes sense. Yeah, cool.
It's also quite nice that they have a, for the shortcuts app, once a command has finished, it can return multiple bits of data so that you can continue it on in a shortcut. So, for example, if I say log time against Skyrim, blah, 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 it could then return a piece of data to say this is the total number of hours over the last week or month or whatever, so that you can then have a shortcut follow up with that, so that you can just run a shortcut to do a load of stuff. Whereas before, I think you could only return one piece of data, and it was always like a string that would be read out. So people got quite creative and would fill that with like JSON data that they'd then rip out again. But now it's actually got that supported in, so you can return lots of data at the end of a shortcut, and then people can use those parameters in their next shortcuts, which is kind of cool. But
Very cool.
Yeah, but the conversational API is nice. And the only other API thing I wanted to talk about is that there is now the ability... I don't know if you remember, back in iOS 11, they released the Vision framework, which was for... detecting stuff. So you could say, is this a plant? And it would say, yes, that is a plant. Or, you know, what is this? And it would say, that is a monkey. And it could do basic tagging. But they also had a text recognition one. But annoyingly, it would recognize where there was text. You could put a bounding box around it to go, that is a line of text. But did you want to know what that text was? We can't tell you that.
Oh,
can only tell you that there is text there. You'll have to do your own OCR on it now, which was always a pain. Whereas now, they do have an actual text recognition API. So now you can take a picture of something, and then it will give you all of the text back, and you can get it in various different formats, which is pretty cool. And I'm going to have a tutorial on how to do that on my website, probably before this podcast goes out this afternoon.
Cool. Sounds good.
So you can check that out, which is pretty cool. But yeah, that makes things a lot easier for me with a few little project I was working on. But apart from that, I mean, there's a lot of changes, a lot of APIs. There's a lot to dig into. And we've not even scratched the surface on a lot of the functionality, no. Like shared AirPod usage. That's pretty cool. Lots of little tiny improvements all over the shop, which is good.
Yeah, I'm going to download the see if I can download Xcode 11, have a play around with the Swift UI stuff. Should be interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else?
I don't think so. No.
I had some other things noted, but I can save that till next time.
Yeah. Good. Cool. All right. Well, until next time then.
And, catch up again.
Enjoy your Swift UI practice.
See ya.